Diana, give us
I'm
a bell.
Back.
Hold on.
Oh, yeah. Do a bell ringer thing. That's great.
Do a bell ringer thing, Diana.
Hi, I'm Diana. Lois talks from the heart. Early in 1941, she and Bill bought stepping stones. Lois was ecstatic. How wonderful it was to have a home of our own. At that time in our lives was the first of all, a refuge from wandering. And it gave us a chance to enjoy much interest as music, reading, and gardening. All these perfectly normal activities had been denied us for a long time. It gave us the particularly an opportunity to be alone together and to plan for the future. You know, they were homeless for 2 years. They wandered around. And I think that had to have just been the most wonderful thing that happened to both of them, to have a place to be and a place to call home. So I'm Diana, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Diana. So if you guys want to raise your blue hands, your electronic hands for sharing, if you can't find it, put it in the chat to me and I will come and find you. If I can, somebody will make me aware of it. Don't stick your hand up in the picture. Well, you can, somebody will see it, but it takes a lot longer. And I would love to open it up for sharing.
I mean, can I say one thing, please, Yvonne?
Yeah.
You know what? We've been talking about all sorts of grief that we have in our lives. Today, our world is grieving. So there are folks that are suffering from COVID who have lost loved ones. We're grieving those horrible fires in California. We're grieving the hurricanes. We're grieving the loss of jobs for the people that we love. We're grieving the schools being closed. I mean, it's just like whatever you want to share over the next hour and a half, whatever, you know, I just am very much aware that our society, our world, our lives are being touched by an enormous amount of grief too. This is your workshop. Please share how you're feeling. Thank you, Yvonne.
Thank you so much. Helen. Can you unmute yourself, Helen?
Hi, I'm Helen. Thanks for calling on me. I was, Stephanie, my goodness, I was writing so fast, I could hardly listen to you. I took so many notes, just loved, I don't know, you just really touched my heart often, many times, because I was just reading the book myself. I've read it before. I've had this book for a lot of years. But, you know, our Al-Anon literature is just so awesome. It's so incredible. And it just behooves me to pick up one of my old books and read it again. And I was reading the part that I just was reading before you, just reading before I came on, if you want to read with me, it's on 152, and it talks about keep coming back. And it talks about how things get tough, I can always count on Al-Anon to be there for me, whether I'm at home or 1,000 miles away. So here I am on Al-Anon Without Borders, and I know a lot of people are 1,000 miles away. So it's just so lovely, you know, that we have this. And some people are not availing themselves of Zoom, and I don't get that because it's so – the first time I found these meetings, I was just so impressed. I was immediately in love and tried to attend them every time they're available to me. Maybe not the whole time. I can't sit too long. But then I also wanted to tell you, Stephanie, that thank God that I met you today and that I heard you today and that my mind is in a spot where I can listen to you today, because had I heard you when I first came into Al-Anon and I heard you saying how much you were grieving the fact that you lost your husband, I would have said to you, oh my God, I pray for that every day. I was so miserable, and I was such a victim. And I just knew that without him, my life would be perfect. I had nothing wrong with me, right? Because I was too new. I hadn't done any step work yet. So thank God I met you today and understand the loss. And actually, when this book first came out and they were suggesting members write something, I wrote my story about the not necessarily the loss of my husband, but more the through divorce, but more the loss of the dream. And, you know, the dream was never a reality. It was just my dream, but it was still a huge loss to me when that dream did not work out for me. However, as you alluded to several times, grief changes, doesn't it? I love that your tears get softer and your grief lessens. And I started to find those happy moments that you refer to. And I found out that all of the things that happened, every solitary one, whether it was grieving, whether it was sorrow, whatever it was, all turned into things that were necessary for me to get to where I am today. Today, I am happy, joyous, and free. I have an absolutely fabulous life. I just wake up every morning and say, just pick gratitude. Don't change your attitude from anything. Just pick gratitude. And I write to keep my mind focused on the gratitude. I have so many things to be grateful for. And one of them is you, Stephanie. Thanks again for sharing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Helen.
Kathy S. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kathy, and I am an alcoholic. However, I started my recovery in Al-Anon. It took 3 years of you wonderful people to help me get well enough to know that I needed to be across the street or across the hall in the other room. However, I've never lost my need for making sure that I call her my Al-Anonette, because she can be a real troublemaker. I so appreciate, and I'm sorry that I do not remember, didn't catch the name of the lady that said, you know, that there's a lot of grief going on in our world right now. And I appreciate being reminded that grief is not just about somebody dying. And I'm still coming to terms with that. You know, the last lady, Helen, shared about how she realized, or that I interpreted, she realized that the loss of her relationship or after her divorce wasn't the grief about the person, it was the grief about the dream. And it took me 15 years in my recovery to realize that's what I was grieving. You know, it was, and why I was still staying stuck in it. Like, if only, it's crazy, the journey or the process that it takes. I don't know why it takes me as long as it does, but it does. But realizing that grief doesn't have to last a long, long time, but it definitely comes in stages, because, you know, I'm in an anniversary time of when my father passed away, and he passed away in 1989 behind this disease. But I realize that as time goes on, I have a different stage of grief. And my automatic tendency is to say, well, you shouldn't feel that way. It was a long time ago. But I have some recovery brain cells that say, well, if you haven't felt it yet, it's okay to feel that way. What are you going to do about it? You know, and then, you know, kind of talk through it. So I see there's people nodding their head. I see there's people that are smiling. So I know I'm in the right spot saying some of the right stuff. And I'm glad that I'm here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good to see you. Rania.
Thank you, Vaughn, and thank you for everyone who's made this this convention happen. It's this Zoom is just fabulous. It's changed my life. Stephanie, thank you so much for your discussion and your talk on grief. I am grieving for my marriage, and just as many people have talked, grieving for that dream of a certain type of family life. What I am learning is that families don't have to be in a certain way. You don't have to have mommy, daddy, and 2.3 children, and it's perspective, and Al-Anon allows me to change my perspective and realize that families come in different shapes and forms, and that's all good, and that's a family, and I'm grieving for that as well as changing my perspective. I love to hear all the stages in grief and the fact that they come at different times. And sometimes it just hits me really unexpectedly. Al-Anon allows me to realize that it's okay to sit in the discomfort, feel the feeling, and move on, and that it's going to take as long as it's going to take, and there's no, it's like a roadmap, but there's no time scale on it. And that's why I tuned into this, because I did become aware that it was huge grief I was feeling, and I would go back and forward, and the reasoning and all those parts of the grieving process, I go back and forward. And it's human nature to grieve, and like all these things, Al-Anon gives me the tools to cope with anything that life throws me. Thank you for these conventions to help me.
Thank you, Grania. Sushma's iPad.
I didn't realize you would call me. Well, my name is Sushma. My name is Sushma, and I'm so grateful for this whole program. Really, you know, I'm grieving, yes, but I think I'm in the process where my husband left me after 39 years when I did the intervention for his alcoholic behavior. The first 20, 25, 30 years were okay. I mean, I was able to tolerate it. But in the last 3 years after he relapsed, after almost 17 months, things have been really, really bad. And on top of that, with COVID-19 and my daughter's cancer survived, you know, she had a huge cancer problems, and COVID-19 has been very hard. And because of the intervention, he just reacted in a different way altogether. He bought a motorhome and he started living in there and committed adultery. And then lo and behold, I get summons for divorce. And that is when I had my self-preservation and the guidance from my fellow Al-Anon members, especially my sponsor, who've been very, very helpful, big support. I had to take action, and I'm grieving for the lost dreams. I'm grieving for times together. I could almost not relate with Stephanie about dancing. You know, we used to dance, we used to go waltzing, and all of that good stuff. But this alcohol can really ruin one's life, and that is where I am. And he stopped drinking. When he stopped drinking, he didn't go to any program. So how Stephanie said, her husband became sober, but he was depressed. But in my case, he doesn't want to accept that it's a problem. And that's the reason why I worry about him, because if he stops it and he doesn't go to the program again, where am I going to be? So I'm planning in such a way that, first of all, taking care of myself. And I can't believe that I can take care of myself. There was 10 years ago, I couldn't even drive a car in the night alone. But today I'm living alone and I'm doing things very well, you know, managing my business. And for some reasons, I feel that's a higher power, you know, guiding me through this whole thing. And it's Yvonne, you're great. I mean, I can't even, except for saying that thank you so much for your service and this wonderful program. I wouldn't have survived. And like Stephanie said, you have to go within. So I was living outside. I had a house, I had a business, I had a nice, lovely family, and this and that. But there's the alcoholism that was eating it up. And I couldn't hide it anymore. I couldn't protect anybody anymore. And it's out in the open now. So we'll see how it goes. And thanks for letting me share. I'll be coming back. I'll keep coming back. Thank you.
Thank you, Sushma. Darianne. Marianne, yep.
I was trying to unmute myself on my picture and not on the bottom. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Yeah, I'm Marianne from Southeast Florida, and I've been in the program quite a while. And you know, it says, I think it said, or somebody asked how I'm feeling today, and I'm just very, very sad. A week from today, my son would be 32 years old. I lost him to this disease. And if it weren't for Al-Anon, I would not even be here. I would have no clue how to do this grief. I've lost other people. I went through a, you know, which at the time was a traumatic divorce, and it was the worst thing that ever happened, and I could never imagine that there'd be anything worse. And, you know, sometimes I heard somebody on a meeting earlier today say something about hitting bottom. I never imagined that this would be it. And sometimes I just have to remind myself to breathe. You know, having been brought up in an alcoholic home, I already had trauma. I already had the PTSD. And I was working on that because of Al-Anon. I was working on, you know, my childhood issues at the time I lost my son. And I just couldn't do it right then. And it's taken me a while, you know. I've had people ask me, like, so when did this happen? Did this happen recently? And to me, that's, you know, I know people mean well, but to me, it's a judgmental question. Like, oh my gosh, it's been that long. You know, I'm never going to get over losing my son. If I'm lucky, if I can stay in this program and work these steps, which I just started doing again with a new sponsor, I have a chance to have a life again. You know, I'm in the process right now of making a shift from just focusing on the loss of my son and getting back to me, getting the focus back on myself. And it's really hard. It's really very hard. And I just made some notes because that's what I need to do. You know, I have no idea what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes. I was on another Zoom meeting, the spirituality workshop, and somebody who's on here texted me and said, do you know that there's a meeting, you know, a Zoom meeting? She sent me the things, and here I am. I have no idea what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes. I had no idea when I got that knock on the door. If anybody had said to me, I'll give you $1 million or $100 million if you can tell me who's knocking at your door right now, I never would have said a sheriff, even though I knew my son was in trouble. I've met other women on the phone bridge who've lost children and connected with them. And that's been a real saving grace. And just being able to share that. I mean, that's why we're here. We connect because of our similarities. And, you know, I read somewhere, too, it's the grief. It's the grief that connects us. You know, this recovery program is a lot about grief, about changing things. And this book is, you know, this book has saved my life and those meetings. If love could have saved my son, he'd be here. Love is not enough. Unfortunately, it's not. And I'll just, you know, I'll say this. I was able to separate the disease from my son and tell him I loved him. Even though that didn't happen in the home I grew up in. And there's three, I'll end with this. There's three readings, and I'm not going to read them all, don't worry, but I just want to refer to them, that I include in my prayer time in order to have some sanity and serenity in my life. And one is from March 25th, which it says, I came to Al-Anon confused about what was and was not my responsibility. And the first paragraph tells the responsibility I have to myself. The second paragraph tells me the responsibility I have to others. And the third paragraph tells me what I am not responsible for. And sometimes that's more important. And it says I'm not responsible for my alcoholic loved one's drinking, sobriety, job, cleanliness, diet, dental hygiene, or other choices. it is my responsibility to treat this person with courtesy, gentleness, and love. And I was able to do that. And the one that's really helping me get back to me is from In All Our Affairs. And it talks about recovery and what it means and how to change my thought patterns. It's on pages 138 and 139. And how perfectionism, procrastination, and paralysis are three of the worst effects of alcoholism in my life. And I had that, you know, this grief process is, I don't know, for me, it hasn't been easy. So I'll just close with this. I'm struggling. I'm really struggling. So if you could keep me in your prayers, one of the things I've learned to do is ask for help when I need it. So if you could keep me in your prayers, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Marianne.
Thanks, Marianne.
We're happy you're here. Arlene.
I'm Arlene Al-Anon.
Hi, Arlene. And,
my experience with grief is I've had suicide experience and the most difficult one. 25 years ago, I lost my third husband, who was alcoholic. That was my ticket into the program from the disease of alcoholism. We'd been divorced about 7 years when he passed away, and I was married to my fourth husband at the time, who was in recovery. And the most difficult time was 7 years ago. I lost Charles, who was my husband in recovery, from acute respiratory distress syndrome that was apparently the result of a acute allergic reaction to IV contrast dye. He'd gone to an appointment for medical follow-up. It was 250 miles from where we lived, and I received a phone call from the gentleman who'd driven him down there. He was down there for an appointment, and I'm getting a phone call that he's in intensive care on a ventilator. And that was just totally shocking. I was doing a conference that particular weekend, well, not a conference, a class at my home. And so I couldn't go down there for another day to where he was. And when I went down there, here he was, you know, sedated and on a ventilator. And that lasted for approximately 3 weeks. There was an interval where he seemed like he was going to recover, and there was a lot of hope. And that was the 4th of July weekend. It's still hard after 7 years, so don't say there's a time limit to this stuff. Anyway, so I went home because it seemed like he was doing better. And the evening of the 4th of July, I got a phone call that the decision needed to be made whether he was going to go back on the ventilator or not. And he wanted me to make that decision because he couldn't make it up. And basically said he was going to pass away without it. And so I said, put him back on the ventilator. I want to be there. And so I went back down, and his daughter and some other friends came and were there. And I had to make the decision to stop the ventilator. It is so damn hard. Anyway, fortunately, through all of that, Al-Anon was there. And I knew some people because I'd been involved in area assembly work and stuff. So I could go to some of the meetings, and people knew me, and I could share what was going on. And the evening after I took him off the ventilator and he passed, I went to a meeting, and they were talking about their day and, you know, how things went, and things aren't really looking so good for some people and so on. And it came my turn, and I said, I've had absolutely the worst day of my entire life. And they listened to me and listened to me share and loved me and held me. And anyway, the thing that helped me the most was getting a grief sponsor. And this happened to be a wonderful woman. She was an AA person. She knew about Al-Anon, but her main thing was AA. But she'd lost her husband approximately 8 years prior to my loss. And I remember after the dust settled and everybody went home, you're just kind of sitting there going, oh my God, now what? And so I called her and I said, will you be my grief sponsor? And she said, yes. And so she sent me some books, and other folks sent me books and things. And I actually went, and a few months later, I went and spent a week with her on a couple separate occasions. And we, you know, went through things and went through the steps and talked about things and talked about how it goes and so on. And, you know, today I'm still on the journey. We had a lot of property together that I've had to dispose of over the years. And now the most hardest thing is we also had a lot of animals. We had horses, we had dogs, we had cats. And last spring I had to make the decision to euthanize three of those horses because they were chronically sick and were in pain. And, you know, it's just an up and down process. You know, life goes on and our dreams that we had together, you know, now I'm living in South Dakota and that was our dream to live in South Dakota, but that didn't happen until after I lost him. And where I'm at is the property that exactly what we were looking for our dream. And it's like, you know, I've got people in my life. You know, God's looking out for me. It's not all doom and gloom. tears are coming because they're coming. But, you know, it's just a process. And my grief sponsor told me one time, it's like this big rock in your gut that has all sharp edges. And with time, the edges smooth out, but the rock is always there. And every now and then it'll poke you. And the other thing was, you know, you could not have the pain if you would have never loved. And it's like, I would not give up that love that I had for any of the people that I lost over time. And the memories, I would not have given that up to not have the pain. And so we thank you very much. I was looking forward to this conference and thank you so much. I look forward to all of them. And anyway, thanks.
Thank you, Arlene. Camille.
Hello, everybody. My name is Camille, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Camille.
And I just adore Miss Stephanie, and she has been an angel in my life for a couple decades now. And I remember meeting her and hearing her story and wondering how anybody could ever go through that. And she was there for me when my mom died, and she prayed my daughter into the world. And today's the anniversary of my mom's death, and that's like been 22 years. My husband and I talked about it at breakfast. And to this day, that still was my hardest experience with death. And about 7 years ago, my dad and my sister died within a month of each other, and 6 months later, I was asked to start a children's grief center. And so for the past 7 years, I've been sitting around a circle, just like we do in a meeting, and hearing children say, my name's John, and I'm 5, and my dad died. And they look up, just like we do at meetings at a first step, and every kid around the circle is nodding because they've all had that experience. And these children have taught me so much about, you know, I hate the term embracing your grief, but I've imagined myself sitting on the edge of a bed, and my grief is almost like this dark figure, like not evil at all, but just, you know, it's just like dark, and it just is sitting next to me. And if I deny it and try to hide it and stuff it in the closet, then it will come out eventually. And when my mom died, about 6 months later, I got pregnant for the first time in my life. I was 40 years old and had tried for 3 years to get pregnant. And so the whole time I was stuffing my feelings because I knew energy. I do body work, and it was like, oh, the baby in my belly can feel the energy in my body. And then when I got pregnant, I'm holding this baby and I'm thinking, where's my mom? And then it was like, oh, smile, be happy. Don't let the baby see you be sad. And I did that for about 3 years. And at 3 years and 16 years of sobriety, I had thoughts of killing myself. And I had had that experience as a teenager. And it was the first time in my sobriety that that had come up again. And it scared me. And I got help. And so I on a constant daily basis, work on my depression and do the work that I need to do to keep that beast at bay, because I have a mental illness. You know, I have the disease of addiction and codependency, and most of the things that I react to today, I can trace back to my childhood traumas and grief. And so I loved how Stephanie talked about all the aspects of grief. And today, I loved what I just heard shared too, is that, you know, our love, the degree that we love is the degree that we grieve. And so, and if we deny those feelings, it will just make us sicker, just like our secrets. And I love that you're hearing more and more about grief in society, and the first reaction and symptom of denial is breaking down that stigma, and, you know, that there's something wrong with you if you're still grieving. For me, you know, if you've experienced loss of any kind, I feel there's something wrong with you if you aren't grieving. So I love you, Stephanie, from the bottom of my heart, and thank you for always being there for me through thick and thin. Thank you.
Thank you, Camille. Sandra, I found you. Would you like to unmute yourself?
Hi, hello. Thank you. I'm Sandra, grateful member of Al-Anon. My father was the alcoholic in my life. And Stephanie, you said something in the beginning about that in your family, no one in the family was able to express themselves. And that sort of stayed with me. So as a child, there was some violence at home, and I learned quite very, very early on to keep the calm, to bring calm to everyone, to calm the situation, and not to say anything, whereas maybe other people were yelling and arguing. I learned just to keep quiet. And I realized a few years ago when I was in couples therapy, how affected I had been by the alcoholism and my father's death. When the therapist asked, "Why are you so emotionally dependent on your husband?" And that was the first time I realized that I was codependent. And the first time that I had to go back and see why and realize that it was because of the growing up in the alcoholic home. My father took his life when I was 12. And I didn't really want to go back to that. I didn't think that it was a long time in the past. I didn't have to deal with the alcoholism anymore. I realized now, I'm realizing how it affected me and everything, in all my thoughts and all of my relationships, not just with my husband, but at work, with my own son. And for me, I've lived with guilt all these years, because my parents had separated, and the last time I saw him, I was 11. And although my father was never, I guess he never was expressive, he did start to basically tell me that he was going to take his life. But I didn't understand it, because I still didn't have that notion that you could take your life. But I felt very uncomfortable. I did not like what I was hearing. I didn't know what to do with that, though. And for all of my adult life, I've sort of blamed myself that, you know, I should have spoken to someone. Maybe if I was a little bit older, I could have helped him. I know in my adult mind, I know that I was not able. I would not have been able to do anything about that. And you mentioned something about guilt, that it's sort of like a useless emotion. And I'm going to, I realize now that I do need to deal with this. I've never dealt with it before. And I did come into the program because I needed to learn to express myself. I know that one of the main reasons why my husband and I don't have a good relationship is because I'm not able to voice myself. And I'm learning to do that now in Al-Anon, and I'm really, really grateful for that. Throughout the years, I have myself been suicidal, much younger, just a few years ago, maybe there was a time when it was quite strong, and then I just I put my son first, and then I thought I cannot make him go through what I went through, and learning to express myself is really, really helpful. I'm learning tools that I didn't learn when I was young, so when I do go through moments of difficulties, I have a program, I have a community, I have all these tools, and I'm very, very grateful, and thank you all for your shares.
Thank you. If you, I'll unmute you. There we go. Marianne.
Hi, I'm Marianne from Northeast Florida. Grief. Thank you, Yvonne, for chairing this meeting. And Stephanie, your story is just awesome. Higher power definitely got me here to this meeting. I was at another district meeting and somebody mentioned it. And I'm so glad that I came. I lost my husband, passed away 7.5 months ago. I've experienced a lot of loss in my life from childhood. I had a sister that was murdered. My brother died of AIDS. Parents died very young. And my husband was not an alcoholic. Well, he was an alcoholic when I married him, but he was in recovery. And then 10 years into the marriage, he relapsed and never went back. And somebody talked here about the loss of the dream, being married to the alcoholic. And I had all of that, and I had this running scenario in my head that I was going to leave him as soon as the kids grew up, as soon as I got close to retirement, and I never left. And when you were telling your story, Stephanie, about your daughter, you were telling my story. My daughter was also had the disease. At age 17, I was driving her to a rehab, crying all the way, and continued to grieve for years after that for all the things that I missed with her. Today, you know, I am so grateful to this program and to AA. My daughter is sober and in recovery, and she's a wonderful, amazing woman and an amazing mother. But so here's my story. I moved from back north here because my son moved here. And 6 months with the idea that my husband and I were going to go back and forth and be quote unquote snowbirds. And 6 months after we arrived here, my husband was diagnosed with acute cancer, and myeloid cancer, AML. And thus we started our journey back and forth to the hospital, Mayo Clinic, every day for the next 2 years. Of course, his drinking subsided and he was so happy to be here. And our relationship just had a miraculous turnaround. I realized how much I loved him. I was so grateful that we had this opportunity, even though it was amidst all this. I knew I was going to lose him, and it was amidst all the sickness and pain. But we had this amazing spiritual reconciliation, and I just stayed in the program and stayed in close to higher power every day until the end. And when you told that story, it reminded me about your husband and you dancing. We had gone to a concert, and I had asked my husband to get up and dance. It was a slow dance, and he said, I just can't do it. I just don't have the strength. And I said, okay. On the way back to the car, there was another slow song, and he just grabbed me. And there we were dancing in the parking lot. And it was such a special, special moment that I hang on to all the time because, you know, even with his cancer and his struggle, he pushed through it all the time. Had such humility. And I never, ever thought that I would feel the way I do for him. And I love what you said. When there was something you said about having gratitude for their lives and praying that my pain not be wasted. I'm going to just hang on to that. It's been a wonderful meeting. I just want to thank everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marianne. Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm an alcoholic, and I so appreciate this session. I was actually told by a friend in AA about this yesterday, and so I'm really glad that I tuned in. I have a little over 3 years of sobriety and come from a family very similar. Stephanie, everything's fine. Everything's fine. Nothing bad happens. Very Pollyanna. If it happens, we don't talk about it unless you're talking about it behind the person's back. And so my alcoholism happened to my parents, and I've had a lot of resentments about that. And then last March, so March of 2019, my older sister, who I had been estranged from, I have two sisters, older sister and a twin sister. My older sister had, you could say, a nervous breakdown and came up to live in my parents' guest house. And
hey, Jim, can you make a quick phone call with the speakers that come after this? Would you be able to facilitate the mute and unmuting for 5 to 10 minutes?
Yvonne, you weren't muted.
I'm not muted. Well, then Jim knows what I'm doing. Jim, I need to make a phone call. Can you mute and unmute? And I'm so sorry, Sarah. I thought I was muted.
That's okay. No problem. Anyway, she came up to live in my parents' guest house, which is where I had gone to get sober. I moved. I had lost everything. Car business, you name it, I lost it. And so I was, I continued drinking for 6 months and then started my sobriety journey. And anyway, she moved into the guest house. And without this program, I would not have had the gift of being able to reach out to her. We come from a 6 o'clock is cocktail hour family, and I knew that she drank pretty heavily. And so I reached out to her and tried to encourage her to come to AA meetings with me. And that felt like a huge step in kind of repairing our relationship for me to be able to share that with her. And ultimately, she commits suicide last October. So it'll be a year on October 15th. And she commits suicide in my parents' guest house. And so I don't know if any of you have heard the poem, The Guest House, but it's before all this happened, I loved that poem. I knew someone else that commits suicide, and I heard that poem, and it was really special to me. But it has a lot of significance now. And I guess what I wanted to share is the dynamic of two things. The dynamic of I was not close to my sister. My sister treated me pretty horribly my entire childhood and adult life. She resented that my sister and I were born because we were twins and stole the show. And so I have that dynamic of grieving the loss of her life because I have some resentments around my parents' inaction and Pollyanna-ish around that. So it's been an interesting grief experience. And I guess the other piece of it is with my parents, you know, their way of being is to, we're fine. It's over. It happened. We move on. And I have this program. And so I get to do this my way. And So it's been an interesting journey because while I feel like I'm going through it in a way that feels good to me, it's very hard to kind of do it alone in terms of not having my family join me in the process of grief, or at least the grief that I'm experiencing. And so it's been an interesting experience. The last thing I'll say is we grew up fairly atheist and kind of a lot of judgment and I guess you could say judgment around religion. And so when I came into AA, it was an interesting experience for me to understand that spirituality is separate from religion and what that's going to look like for me. And like I said earlier, I'm just over 3 years sober, and I just a couple of weeks ago had a spiritual experience that has completely shifted everything for me in terms of how I'm processing her decision, and my relationship that I get to continue having with her, even though she's passed, and that can be different than it was in life. And it certainly helps with my AA program in terms of working with that higher power and relying on a higher power. So grief is an amazing experience, and I feel silly saying it, but I'm grateful for it because I think that it makes us all have so much more empathy for other people's experiences. And what I wrote down a few things, Stephanie, but I wrote down, pray that your pain won't be wasted. And that's something that I feel really strongly about in going forward. I'm kind of at a career transition, and I really want to do something that feels meaningful to me to help other people that are experiencing pain, because I just think it's so valuable to show up for others that are going through that. So anyway, thank you so much. I loved your story, and it's just wonderful to be a part of this today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, Beth, can you unmute yourself?
Sorry. Hi, Yvonne. Hi, Diana. Hi, Billy and the team. Thank you so much for this platform. And thank you so much, Stephanie. And I love that A dot, 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 dot without borders. But when I saw that you were coming to do this workshop and it had the suicides in it, that's what I thought I would have come anyway. But yeah. So there's so many useful things, really. And thank you, everybody. Really thank you for everybody sharing, because I've got to say something, and I got it stuck in my chest that I can't get it out.
Well, I will be on. I'll be on about a quarter till. Back on. All right.
So I'm glad that other members of either fellowship have said about depression. So I lost my mom to suicide about 12 years ago, and We fought as a family because it had that on the death certificate. But I really kind of knew the truth. Nobody wants to talk about it, really. Nobody does. But I know she was an untreated Al-Anon. Everything was sorted. I know that it was. And she'd made me dinner. She only lives down the road from me. It's not like America. I'm in the UK, right? So it's a smaller country. And she lives down the road from me, but she didn't tell me that she included the dinner or whatever. And I was just so tired and I didn't go. And then she was rushed to hospital, and that was it. And like you say, the trauma and the shock, it was just... And because I couldn't say goodbye to her. And, you know, she's an untreated Al-Anon, so she's got a bit of a bad rap in the family, unfortunately. They're both children of alcoholics. My dad used to drink. My brother died in the disease. But because I'd had a bit of Al-Anon before, I had a couple of years and then I went away. And then I've been back now a couple of years. and I'm beginning to see. But what the point of it is I thought I had grieved. I thought I had grieved. And then this kind of lockdown, and I, you know, this lockdown, and I've lost roles. My daughter's moved away. I don't see my grandad. He's in another country. I haven't seen him for a long time because of this. I was crying last night, really sobbing from the depths of my being. And I said, what is it? What is it? Saying hi, Pat, what is it? And it's because I miss her. I really miss her. But I felt it. It was just, I really felt it. So it's been really helpful to me, all the things you say, and the loss of things, like the loss of the dream. That's, yeah, that's really spoke to me. And, you know, that expectation, where I should be now, you know. Have a little bit of compare and despair sometimes, but just getting out, you know, my mum, I know their history. I know their, both my parents' history. And with my mum, she was very isolated and she didn't have anyone to speak to, you know. And through my own experience of depression, and I suppose it is a choice, but it's coming from, and everybody's different. But there's not, sometimes it's not, you're lucky if you've got a little clinch of hope, you know, a little bit of light. And sometimes people don't have that. So I'm just so grateful to just say it. And thank you for everybody sharing from their heart, because I can feel it in my heart. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. I'm so happy to see you. Thank you for sharing. Ronnie.
Hi, everyone. Greetings from Austin, Texas. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. What a wonderful time, and what a wonderful shares. I wanted to share a little bit about grieving, my grief, my journey with grieving in Al-Anon. I found Al-Anon, and one of my careers was nursing, and we had to do continuing education. And because of Al-Anon, I would gravitate a lot to grieving workshops. And Al-Anon was teaching me to listen, and the meeting the CEUs were the means to get a lot more. And it always rotated back to one day at a time. And that valuableness that Al-Anon was leading me with. And in the literature, I can't, it's either one day at a time or Courage to Change, where the writer tells us it's about wrapping our loved ones in what you might think their favorite blanket would be. And I still use that many times when I have thoughts of my losses to wrap them. And one of those examples was a daughter was going through cancer all through 2011. And either her or she rescued this crazy quilt out of one of her cousin's trunks that he had in his car trunk to pad things if he was moving them. So here was this vintage crazy quilt, and I put it together. You know, there were some missing pieces, and I put it together, and I'm thinking of a tapestry of life. And that daughter loves special linen, and she loved that. I think she was the savior of it. So during her cancer, she would have, radiation, then some surgeries, and then a chemo. And she would lay on her couch in that blanket. And that was the best place for her to be with my higher power, you know, watching over for her besides her own. And there was a loss of my first granddaughter, her first child, and I had made a quilt for her, and that was really special. And today's was the reminder of grief's a process, and I certainly could relate to the country music, when the sadness and the times to cry, and there was a time where I couldn't afford it, and I restricted it, but it's back in, and it's been a process, and I can see improvement and just life flowing, helping me flow through it. And always with my higher powers back who's God, who is and was in my life all along. Thanks for being here too. I appreciate you guys.
Thank you. Gretchen. Gretchen, can you? Yeah, there you go.
Hi. I'm trying to get it to work. I'm sorry. Hi. I meant to talk about something just a slightly bit different. You know, I'm a long timer. I'm 37 this month. And in trying to get to know people through Zoom, I found it very awkward to be bombarded with, what step are you working on? Where are you today? When what I really wanted was help shifting my perspective. And I am all for a personal use of, shall we call it, Black Belt Al-Anon. But I have gotten a lot of pushback on not being better. And I know that hurt people hurt other people. And we don't come to Al-Anon because we're all doing well. But I have to be really careful when I do outreach phone calls to articulate what it is I'm calling for. I don't need an immediate solution. Sometimes I just want to talk about what grief feels like or what things I might possibly be grieving, and I don't need a quick fix. I'm really struggling with that. I am having phenomenally bad experiences with kind of ass kickers. And I know that's really awesome for a lot of people. And I know I should not take it personally. That is how that person shares. But I just want to say out loud, I am in grief. People have died. Crap has happened. It is ongoing. And some days are better than others. And I'm going to keep making phone calls. But I'm feeling really bruised. So I really love this workshop. I love everything you've all shared, and you give me great hope when I think of the idea that the way out is through. So I really appreciate this very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Gretchen. Judy. Oh, sorry. Do that again, Judy.
I'm Judy. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon, and this is a great workshop. This is a great time of our life in this COVID to have a grief share workshop. My grief journey has been rather ongoing. My dad died at 57 from alcoholism. My brother died at 40 on his motorcycle. And 10 years ago in July, my son died from an overdose. And before that year was out, my husband, who had 30 years of sobriety, had a double lung transplant that went badly, and then he died. So that was a pretty tough year. And especially, you know, my son had had his dad's example of all those years of sobriety, but yet he chose, you know, addiction lifestyle. And I was very fortunate because my last interaction with him was wonderful because of someone in Al-Anon. I had been complaining in an Al-Anon meeting that he wasn't coming up to see his dad, and he lived 2.5 hours away, and his dad had this terminal illness, and why didn't he come? And somebody at the meeting said, I always get in trouble when I expect addicts to act like normal people. And I knew she was talking to me because I was expecting things from him he wasn't able to give. And so I saw him about a month later. It was random because a friend of mine came to Florida from Seattle to see her daughter, and I went to have lunch with her. So I stopped to see him on the way back, and we had lunch together. And I gave him some money to come up and see his dad for Father's Day because I was going back to Michigan for a fifth step that I was doing with my sponsor. And so before I left him that day, I'd given him some money for gas because he was he had been laid off and was living on unemployment. And he had told me he had quit smoking, and I was so happy for him. And I said, I'm so proud of you. And anyway, so I said, I'll give you, you know, $50 for gas to go spend the weekend with your dad while I'm gone. And I just looked up at him, and I just said, I love you. I'm proud of you. You're gorgeous. and gave him a big hug and left him. And a month later, we got the call, you know, that he had overdosed and he was dead. And he, you know, was playing around with the new killer drug, fentanyl. And he had actually been using since 21, and he was 38. So he'd been using drugs for quite a few years, you know, successfully. And people in Al-Anon, I mean, we know we can get that call at any time once they start using. So for me, I just kept letting go and letting God, letting go, letting God. You know, he'll get sober maybe when his dad did at 32, but he didn't. And then maybe he'll, you know, I don't care how he gets sober. Maybe it'll be God. Maybe it'll be AA. But I always assumed that he would. So when we got that call that he was dead, I was like flattened, devastated, flattened. I could not believe that God let me down like that and that he died. And then, like I said, within a year after my husband died, then it was like double, you know, grief going on. But the people in Al-Anon surrounded me with their love. The funerals that we had were just phenomenal funerals up in Michigan for both of them. And I was surrounded by all of our people that we spent all those years with in recovery. And the love was just incredible. Sorry about that noise. But anyway, so yeah, Al-Anon. And then I did grief work at my church because I had a support group. And about 3 years later, my mom ended up in hospice for several months, and then she had died. She was 90. And so that following year, I started facilitating this grief group at my church. And that really helped me to heal as well as to carry what I had received for healing, you know, from my own life into the lives of other people that were grieving. And someone, you know, mentioned about working with kids. And I mean, this is an adult group, but for me to be there the next time somebody walked in the door whose son or daughter overdosed, or the next time somebody walked in the door whose, you know, husband had died, that's just been really healing for me to carry the message of recovery. And that it does take time, and it is a process, and it is, it's gradual, and sometimes it just knocks you flat. And this week, not this week, like yesterday or the day before, I was cleaning out a box and I found a note that my son had sent to me on Mother's Day, you know, several years before he died. And I read it again and I was crying again, you know, but, you know, that's just because it was a random experience with going backwards again to facing that reality that, you know, he's not here. And, but I've still had a life beyond my wildest dreams, and I still go to Al-Anon all the time. I got busy in service work after my husband died, and that helped fill a void. And then, you know, working, like I said, in my church with the grief people. So I have a full life, and I have a wonderful life. I still have a daughter. I still have three granddaughters, and I have a son-in-law. So that's all that's left of our family now. But I'm very grateful every day for them, and very grateful to be with you on this meeting today. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Thank you for sharing. Margaret.
Hi, it's wonderful to be with all of you here today. Couple of things. One of the things I was going to share was when I was about 18 or 19 years old, one of my good friends and I went for a hike in the hills behind Berkeley in the eucalyptus trees and so on. And we had a wonderful day together, and it was one of the best we had ever had, and had a great picnic and so on. And the next day he committed suicide. And it was a shock because there was absolutely no indication. What I found out later from someone was that when they've at least this is what I was told, when they've made up their mind, they're at peace. And that helped me a lot to realize that, you know, I can't go around, you know, if somebody's really happy, wondering if they're going to commit suicide, obviously. But it was like, it was a parting gift that he gave, and that it was going to happen, and he had already decided. The other thing is, and I've mentioned it in the chat and earlier also, my 47-year-old nephew died suddenly this week on Monday at 11:57 or so p.m. He was like a son to me. I come from a very, very small family, and it's very comforting to be here with all of you, where the topic of grief and loss is openly spoken of, and that nobody resents my talking about it, even if, or is uncomfortable with it. And I can fully experience it. I'm sort of kind of grateful. Some people call it a defect of character when you have this ability to completely compartmentalize, because I have that ability and I've used it. Right now it's coming in very handy in my life because I'm kind of the central go-to person that's having to deal with the details in a family that almost all of them are battling with each other for years, for decades. And I'm kind of Switzerland in the family. And so what's really been great is knowing the effects of alcoholism. I have alcoholism, whether they are people in recovery or not. You know, when you're so sensitive and raw, that's when stuff comes back to hit you. And the tools, first things first, without Al-Anon, I would have never been able to state my needs, my areas of weakness, and say, you know, I'm okay with this, but I'm really awful at technology, or I have no idea how to find out, you know, who his landlord is. All I have is the address. And another, you know, his brother said, I'm really good, because he's a lot younger. I'm really good. I'll take care. And they were so grateful to be able to pitch in and be a part of the process. So each different members are handling different things. So we are experiencing unity in this common goal and this common experience that we need to go through with each other, not necessarily everybody else interactive. And I've also noticed a lot of erratic, as you mentioned, Stephanie, you know, anger and weird responses to things, and just recognizing what that is and saying, you know, I hear what you're saying. However, that's not what I'm asking. I'm just asking about this, you know, or moving on. I couldn't do this. I seriously could not have done this without Al-Anon and the tools of Al-Anon. And I'm immensely grateful to be able to spend an entire, at least half a day with other people, because, you know, that have experience and that are, I can feel you holding me, actually, as weird as that sounds. I can feel it. And it's just super, super, super comforting. Thank you. I love you. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Margaret. Okay. Margie.
Hi, everyone. And I welcome the subject of grief and loss. A couple of months ago, this is a little twirl here. I had to put two of my dogs down from kidney disease. And the vet that I had come to the house wouldn't come in the house. So there was like three of us that packed around this little ponytail palm in my backyard. And I've had these dogs for 16 years. I work from home. So they were with me day and night. And I know, you know, I've heard so many times already, get over it. They're gone. Their spirits are with you. Their bodies are dead. Just be strong and get over it. And, you know, like everybody else, we've got good days and bad days. And I like the one about, like, with the thorns, the prickly things kind of smooth over a little bit, but they always return. And I'm just grateful to have Al-Anon so I can relate to this, whether it's in animals or humans. I remember my mom passed away 20 years ago, and I can remember actually feeling my heart break, you know. So sometimes they say, well, you know, you just have a broken heart. I actually felt my heart break. There was like a strong pain for it seemed like an eternity, but it was only like, you know, maybe a minute, whatever. But it just hurt so bad. And I was so thankful after that pain went away. And then I just thought to myself, I'm so filled with grief that I can experience now my heart actually breaking. When I had to put my dogs down, I didn't feel that pain. But I'm just glad to be able to talk with it, and I'm hoping it'll be better so I don't have to internalize it. And I really didn't know there was, like, you know, Al-Anon had grief sessions. You know, I don't know. But I'm thankful to be able to talk about this, because I know a lot of you out there have had animals that have passed. And that's it. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Margie. Thank you for sharing. And, oh, hold on. There you go.
Okay. Hi, my name's Anne. Hi, Yvonne. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for just being. Thank you, Stephanie. I don't have to say for what, do I? I looked at the questions. I wrote them down as fast as I could. What am I grieving? My answer to that is, what am I not grieving? I think that, like, grief is just this thread that runs through life. I'm capable of grieving the loss of perfection. That was a big one. When I realized I couldn't do anything perfectly, and and that was the image I had built of perfection, I thought. Everybody can see right through you, let me tell you, but right through me. But I thought somehow that, you know, I looked perfect. I spoke with the highest possible voice. Like, I think it was like 2 octaves higher than it is now. Al-Anon has brought my voice down. Al-Anon has calmed me down. And I was just thinking that I'm just so grateful. I love that I can feel, and I just, like, I allow it. There are some things I don't want to, and I'll cover my face, but I mean, it happens anyway. I can't hide it for the life of me. The other thing I was thinking about was that somebody said at some point, God won't give us anything we can't handle. I don't know about that. I'm going to have to wait. I'll tell you on my deathbed if that one's true or not. I think there's some pretty shitty things that can happen, and I don't look forward to the possibility of any of them, and I live in fear of some of them around my children. But I don't live in fear all the time. I live in fear if I forget to do my 12 steps, and that there is God after all of these things. I did make notes. That's why I keep looking over here. I have grief over wasted years in Al-Anon. I refuse to get a sponsor. For a long time, I self-sponsored. I have grief over that. That's a loss of a couple of decades. I mean, that's painful. But then I look at it and I think, okay, I did that. I can admit that. That's a gift in itself. And then I think, I guess while I was out in the desert, you know, poking around, doing the steps the way I thought they needed to be done, whatever, I was still learning and I was still grieving. And I think maybe it's enriched my appreciation of sponsorship now. And the other thing is my parents. Okay, so my mother died of Alzheimer's. I got to wipe my mother's bottom in the bathroom. And I don't think that's something you can get through without grief. I had her tell me that she liked me so much. And that's a real compliment. I don't think she knew exactly who I was to her, but, you know, and she said once, I love you. And I saw that she knew who I was. And now my dad, 14 years later, has the same disease. I get to go through it again. And I talk to him on the phone, and I can't go. He's in a different province, and you're not allowed to go to the hospitals. So I can't go. He's in hospital. And I talk to him, and I go, hi, Dad. And he goes, hi, Anne. And then he says things that show me that he doesn't really know what's going on. He wants out of there, and then he takes the nurse's food. So it's like, I can almost laugh over that, but I'm going to lose a parent to the same disease I lost the first one to. And by the way, there's more grief. If I have two parents with Alzheimer's, what are my chances? Just saying. So yeah, thank you very much, everybody, for being here. I just feel so much love. I always feel a lot of love, but I just feel it like 1,000 times more here. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Anne. Madhuwanti? Do I say that right?
Yes, no. You did. Hi, everyone. I'm a grateful Al-Anon member. I've been on this program for last 4 years. And the answer to the question, what relationship am I grieving today, is my brother went through a divorce 6 months earlier, and it was, I initially thought that it was an amicable one, but as it turns out, it was not. And I got to know a lot of cooked up stories about me especially that were pretty much bad in nature. There was drugs involved, and I have not even touched drugs ever in my life. And my sister-in-law, actually my brother's ex-wife, she had gone to different levels to get his reputation tarnished, and it was humiliating later, I think, but it wasn't really because of Al-Anon. And I must say that Al-Anon has helped me to understand my own disease to such a level that I could laugh it off. And it was, oh my God, I can't even remember the whole thing. But now I realize that the relationship I'm grieving is also of my niece. They have a really adorable daughter who would be turning 3 this month, and able to see probably ever again. This is the first time I saw a kid from a little infant to speaking and she was picking up language. And I don't know, she was just doing so many things. I'm not a person who, I don't like kids that much, but she for once had changed my mind about a lot of things. And so yeah, that's something I am not able to wrap my head around, that just because of one event, I am not able to meet a child who has no part in the whole separation. So yeah, that is one. And she, my brother's ex-wife is also a child of an alcoholic, and they have a pretty broken family, I must say, who, I mean, that family just looks really perfect on the outside. Thankfully, I have a parent who has been on program for the last 15 years, and she could also cope with the loss of her grandchild, I must say, in a very, very graceful way. And I have utmost respect for her to give me the tools that Al-Anon had given her, and it made me easier to understand the loss of communication, the loss of the dream, especially the loss of all the love that I don't know I had for my niece, but I don't know whom to give now. So yeah, and I had been a victim of depression since I was a teenager, and I've had thoughts of killing myself, which I didn't, but clearly. But I should just say that in those years, I lost myself. I lost a connection with my own self, my spiritual self, and my, you know, a self who wanted to live. And I am working. I've been on medication for last 2 years, and I sometimes feel the loss of time, the loss of, I don't know, really good years of through college, through things that, from in which you can get to experience new things with new people, and probably the young days, which I try to remind myself that I'm 30 and it's all right. I mean, the time is not gone. This too shall pass, and there's going to be really good days ahead of you since you have Al-Anon program, which only helps you to understand your higher power's will. And now that I have surrendered myself, surrendered my will, surrendered my life to this program, it's just going to be really good and you're going to get everything you deserve. So yes, mental illness has been something that took away a lot of things from me. But I think, yeah, good things do lie ahead. And I love every one of your sharings. And I just want to give everyone the hope and the strength that I receive in every sharing. And this is just exquisite and wonderful fellowship who lets me talk to so many people across the world. And and I feel the same I'm truly, truly grateful for the sharing. And I'm used to that either. Thanks. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, fellowship.
You're dropping away. Thank you. Okay. Hi, I'm Yvonne. Jen, I saw your hand up. I was going to get to you. I don't know. Did I push you away? But I will get you after I have something to say here. I just, you know, I normally don't share, and I've been sitting here thinking, shall I, shall I, shall I, shall I? And I had some conversations with, I did lower your hand again. I had some conversations with Stephanie as we got ready for this workshop. And, you know, what I discovered is that in my disease, how I'm affected by the family disease of alcoholism, I don't do feelings. I just shut them down. I don't need them. I want happy feelings, but not too happy, because then I can get unhappy and I really don't like that. So I control my feelings. I didn't know how to have feelings. I didn't know what to do with them. They just were out to kill me. That was my feeling. And so my father and mother disinherited me. And for 16 years, I didn't hear or see anything. And one morning at 9 a.m. in the morning, I got a phone call and says, your father had a major heart attack. And he's on life support, and we just pulled the plug. Are you coming over to Europe? I was like, okay. And so as I traveled over there, and as I went through that process of grief and dealing with a lot of unfinished business on top of whatever, the trauma was so much worse than the grief. And don't get me wrong, grief is pretty bad and it's pretty painful, but the trauma is so debilitating and disorientating. Number one, how that came out for me is that I am trilingual and I refuse to speak Dutch, which I have never done before. I don't even use one English word because I just think it's weird. And all of a sudden I spoke English for 3 weeks, and I couldn't sleep. I couldn't think. I was crazy. And I did what needed to be done there. And after about 2 or 3 weeks, I went downtown and my friends, I called out to them in Dutch and they said, oh, look, she has arrived. And I laughed. And weeks and months later, I thought, yeah, they're right. I had arrived, because if I would speak my language, it would get so real. My brain did not know what to do with that. My emotional life was so upset by the trauma that I could not deal. And I just automatically stayed as far away as I could. My body was there, but that's about it. And when I came back to the United States, for weeks and some months, actually, I would go to bed and I would float up to the surface, as in waking up very slowly. And I would ask myself, what year is it? Where am I? What language am I speaking? What country am I in? And it took sometimes 5 or 10 minutes to put them all three together. I would go through all the languages, all the places where I've lived, all the countries, and I'm like, okay. And then I would fall asleep again. The trauma made the grieving almost impossible. And I always thought, why do people bring food if there's a death? I just never got that. I thought, well, what are you going to do with food? And I had the same experience. I drove to the supermarket and I looked at the doors and they opened and closed and I was overwhelmed. I could not go in. I would drive home and I would cry because I didn't know what to eat. The simplest things were overwhelming for me. And I was so happy when somebody called me and says, can I bring you dinner? And I'm like, please, please. Yes. I did go for professional help. I did go to grief group and grief counseling because I knew that I don't know what to do with feelings and I will lock them away. And feelings are like fast frozen food. They stay quite fresh until you defrost them. And what I also learned is that in the grief process of the anger, the denial, the bargaining, the depression, and the acceptance, acceptance is always the last one of the process of grief. And as I started working the steps in Al-Anon, which I was already working by the time my father died, I looked at them and I thought, isn't it interesting that the spiritual principle of step one is acceptance? It starts with acceptance. It doesn't end with acceptance. It starts with acceptance. And when I looked at the grief process of going through all my feelings, in Al-Anon, I've learned how to have the feelings and what to do with them. And to work step one and get into acceptance for me is stop fighting what's here right now. And if I do that, I stop fighting. I will have the time, the insight, and an opportunity for God to come into my life and for me to have an actual feeling because I'm not too busy doing. And then I can actually work step 2 to 12. I can't do 2 to 12 when I'm distracted with other people's feelings because I'm not having one. And if you leave me alone without other people's feelings and places and things, I'm going to have a feeling. And the other thing that I discovered is one of the ways I stay out of feelings is the sun rises in the east and the sun sets in the west. And so the sunrise, great, it's light. Woo. I was up early this morning and it was still dark. And what I do when I see the sunset, I start traveling east because I don't want it to get dark. I don't want to be alone in the darkness. I want it to be light as long as I can. So I start traveling east. I'm going to start running away from the sunset. And what somebody said to me is like, Yvonne, if you would turn around and walk into the sunset, it'll be morning so much faster and the sun will start shining so much faster. You spend way less time in the darkness. And what that means is go towards the feelings, which is so counterintuitive that that takes time for me. I cannot just sit and go, I'm going to have a feeling. Although my sponsor says, why don't you put your little alarm on 5 minutes in the morning and it's time for feelings. And then after 5 minutes, you're done with them. You start with your day. So I can make an appointment with my feelings to have them. Because if I don't, they'll never get to talk to me sometimes. So anyway, I just wanted to share that. And Jan, I'm going to go find you. See if you still wanted to share. There you are. Can you unmute yourself?
Yes, I'm unmuted.
Thank you.
Appreciate the opportunity just to answer the question out loud. Who am I grieving? And I thought, you know, I wouldn't share, but then I realized that it might be a good thing for me to say, and then it might help someone else. I am grieving my husband. He is alive, but he is not well. And we have been separated a great deal of the time. And just in the last week, he left the town that we are in. He has just been, as I refer to, he has gone to the dark side. He, someone that suffers from addiction, but also from depression. And it always is difficult for me as a spouse, as a person that 34 years ago, you know, committed to for better, for worse, for richer and poorer, sickness and health, where it's appropriate to withdraw your support. And of course, withdraw my support looks like what I've learned in this program is enabling trying to fix it for him, wanting recovery for him when he doesn't want it for himself, pleading with him to take his insulin that he requires for his diabetes or his antidepressant to help him manage his depression, and all of those things that I have wanted for him and pleaded for him, he does not want for himself. And so the only, you know, I have been working this program really consistently, you know, for the last 18 months. And it is saving my life, and it is making me realize, has made me realize that I don't have the power to save him, but I do have the power to save me. And I think that that speaks to all of us, whether whether we're have lost our loved ones to death, or we have lost a relationship with the people that we have loved, that we wanted to see succeed, wanted to see them want recovery and a life for themselves. And so this program has given me some peace about that, and that I don't have to be angry, and I don't have to be resentful, and I don't have to shield myself from feeling my feelings, that I can feel them all. And what I can give him is love and compassion. It doesn't mean that I give up my life. It doesn't mean that I stop living. It doesn't mean that it means that I embrace that I do not have the power to save him. And that's painful. It's very, very hard to get to that place. But every single time I take a moment and I pray for him, it gives me peace, because I am not the one that has the power, as much as I really thought I did. I really am not. And I let him know on a regular basis that I love him. I let him know on a regular basis that I'm praying for him, and that he sent me a note today, and he said, "I long for you. I miss you so much." And I know that he feels that way, especially when he gets in pain. And I sent him a note back, and I said, "I am praying that you long for you much, much more, and that you find it within you, the desire to fight for you, and to get your life back, to get that smile back, to get that recovery back. And for me, we won't be back in the saddle again if that happens for him. I will be on the sideline being a cheerleader for him, but I am not going to, tomorrow, he's had a new lease on life. He, for himself, has to demonstrate that he's really ready and is willing to put a lot of time and effort into that. And maybe only then can I consider that this is a relationship that I can live and thrive in. And so that is hard to do. And I know most of you already know that. Thank you for this conference. This is the wind beneath my wings. This is what continues to give me strength to do what's right for me as well as my loved ones. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Jan. Stephanie, I'm going to go back to you.
Thank you, Yvonne. I just wanted to thank everybody for participating today. Thank you, Yvonne. Thank you, Billy. Thanks, Jimmy. Everybody that even listened, because I think we need each other. So there's this one little, and I also, two things, real quick. We didn't talk about losing our health. There were several people today that mentioned that they have cancer. You know, I think that is something we grieve. Our body let us down, you know, and there's nothing, but I think it's the grief that that we have to deal with. Anyway, the other thing is I'm so grateful to know that feelings aren't facts. They're just what they are. And I need to check them out with somebody. The last thing, as we learn from experience, it is our grief that connects us to each other. It doesn't have to isolate us. When we share our pain with other people, we are truly heard and understood, perhaps for the first time. As we learn to apply the Al-Anon tools, we discover that no situation is truly hopeless. In fact, many of us have been able to find hope in the midst of despair and serenity in the face of grief. So thank you. That was on page, wait, I missed it. That was on page 8 in How Al-Anon Works. And I just want to thank you all very much, especially thank you, Yvonne.
Thank you so much for your willingness to do this, Stephanie. I know we talked about this a long time ago, and